John chapter 9. John chapter 9 is where we'll start this morning. We'll be there most of the lesson, but we will be taking some side trips here and there. But this is where we'll be to begin. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Three men were out in a golf course playing golf. Well, that's what you would do on a golf course, isn't it? Unless you're picking, never mind. Three men were out in a golf course playing golf. There was a lawyer, a preacher, and a doctor. And as they got to the first hole, they kept waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and the people in front of them, it just took them forever. So finally they asked one of the caddies to go see what in the world was going on. The caddy went up to find out, and he came back and he said, "Well, you're just going to have to wait, because about a year and a half ago there was a huge fire at the clubhouse, and the volunteer fire department came out here and they put out the fire, and it was a tough job. These three men were working on it, and while they were working on it, there was something that happened in the fire, and they had burning embers fall on them. It was horrible. They were blinded, all three of them. And because they did such a wonderful job fighting that fire, the country club said they can golf here anytime they want to. We'll let them on the course anytime they want to be there." And so the preacher said, "You know, that's a wonderful story. I'm going to say a prayer for these men right now. I'm just going to say a prayer right now for them, and maybe the Lord will see to it that they can be healed." And the doctor said, "Well, you know what? I know a brilliant ophthalmologist. I'm going to send these three men to that ophthalmologist, and I'm going to see if maybe he can do something for them." And the lawyer said, "Why can't they just play at night?" Eyesight is important. It's something that we take for granted a lot of times, don't we? Of course, until it begins to go bad. Those of us who had pretty good eyesight when we were kids, remember when you got 40 years old and you got that disease where your arms just aren't quite long enough to be able to read things? And so you go to the doctor and he says, "Yeah, it's time." And you start getting those glasses so that you can read better. Some of you have had glasses all of your life and you don't know what it's like to not be able to see without those glasses. If you're like Don, you never have to have glasses, ever, in the history of mankind, right? Supposedly, okay. Well, there may be some cracks in that. Angie had glasses when she was a young lady and glasses when we married. And then before we went to Hawaii in 1996, she said, I'm not doing this while we're in Hawaii. So she went and had the laser surgery done. And that laser surgery worked up until about 4 or 5 years ago. And she now has to have reading glasses. But it's not as bad as it was when she was a young lady. We can all agree that eyesight is very important. Remember the episode of Little House on the Prairie where Mary was losing her eyesight? And it went over the course of about 3 or 4 weeks. And then finally there was just a heart-rending moment on one of the Little House episodes where she woke up one morning and she couldn't see. She was totally blind. And it didn't show her, it showed Pa Ingalls. I started to say Pa Kettle. It showed Pa Ingalls. And Pa Ingalls was listening to his daughter scream, "Pa, Pa," and he knew what was wrong. And it was tearing his heart out. That's just a touching scene when you see that. And I can't imagine what it would be to have seen all your life and suddenly you cannot see. But it's even harder to imagine what it would have been like if you'd never seen anything in your life, if you had lived your life in total darkness, if you had always been blind in your life. And that is what this passage is about in John chapter 9. And the entire chapter itself, it is about blind men. And I say it that way because in this story, there's not just one person that's blind. There are several people who are blind. Everyone in this story, except for Jesus, was in darkness. And the only one who wasn't living in the light was the one who was the light. So I want to look at the blind men and blind women in this story as we go along. First of all, we do see the blind man. And this blind man, as we're told in the story, is someone who has been blind from birth. And you think about it today, and we have all of these things that, you have seeing eye dogs, and you have the Lighthouse for the Blind. You have all of these things that are out there, support groups and all, for blind people. And people try to work with them from the time they're born. If they're born blind, somebody's going to be working with them to help them. But there was nothing like that back then. They did not have Braille Torahs. They didn't have anything like that. They didn't have any support group unless it was your friends or your family. Those were the only people that could take care of you. Like Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire, you just depended on the kindness of strangers for everything that you had and everything that you did. This particular man was a beggar, and that's pretty much what they did. They lived kind of hand to mouth. They were begging for things. They had no real opportunities. Now, as a sidelight, while I was studying for this lesson, I read this one thing. It says that blindness, a lot of times in this region, and even up today, is caused by the blowing sand. It gets in your eyes. And then you start rubbing, and before you know it, you go blind from this abrasion in your eyes. But that was not the case here. He was blind from birth. And that may have been a result of disease, or who knows what it is that caused this. It could have been a disease that his parents passed on to him. We don't know that for sure. Whatever it is, when this story opens, we have this vision, if you'll pardon the expression, of a man who cannot see. A man who is in total darkness his entire life, and he cannot see the light that is passing by him. That may explain why the apostles asked the question that they asked. Who sinned? Was it this man who sinned, or was it his parents that he was blind, that he was born? What does it say? That he was born blind. And this was a traditional belief. The apostles had fallen into this. They had decided that somebody must have sinned in order for this man to be born blind. And there was some kind of punishment going on. That's the way people thought back then. And actually, that's the way people think about things today, is that you're being punished by some sin that you did. And isn't that an awful thing to think about? Is that this loving God would make your child blind to punish you? He would make an innocent child blind to punish you. Or it would make an innocent child crippled to punish you. How selfish do you have to think something like that? How utterly selfish do you have to be? And yet that's the way some people were then and the way that some people are now. But the apostles weren't quite sure what was going on, and they had fallen into this trap. And so they asked Jesus, who was it that sinned? Was it this man? Or was it his parents? And what an odd question. Was it the man? How could the man have sinned to be born blind? That's just a strange question to ask. And because of that, you can see that these apostles were kind of stumbling around in their own blindness, a blindness of ignorance. And they did not see the light either. Well, when the blind man came back from the pool after Jesus had healed him, couldn't think of that word for some reason, after Jesus had healed him. I think it was because I probably need to put some context into it. If you read from verse 8 on, therefore the neighbors and those who had previously seen that he was blind said, is this not he who sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. He said, I am he. Therefore they said to him, how were the eyes open? He answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received my sight. Then they said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. And then they go on to taking the Pharisees. These people are looking at this man whom they have seen, who was born blind and who's been begging his entire life. They've seen him come there every day, probably the same spot every day, to beg for whatever he could get. And then he comes back, and he's not blind any longer. And the first question they ask, is this the man? And some said, well, it looks like him. And others say, yes, it kind of looks like him. And the blind man says, it's me. And then they explained to, or then they said, well, how did this happen to you? And he explains what happened to them. And it's interesting to see what they do, because after they don't know where Jesus is, they take this man to the Pharisees. Remember the story of the Samaritan woman at the well? When Jesus told her all those things that had gone on in her life, she ran back to the town and she told the people what was going on. And what did they do? They ran to Jesus. They ran to see Jesus, and they ran to find out more about Jesus. But here, when they can't find Jesus, they don't go looking for Jesus. They take the blind man, now sighted man, and they go to the Pharisees so that they can find out what in the world's going on here. They go to the religious authorities so that they can get some kind of understanding about what it is that has happened here. They were stumbling in a blindness of fear, if you will. They didn't understand anything, and they needed to find out. But instead of going to the source, what they did was they went to a religious authority, if you will. They were afraid to see the light, or they did not understand the light. And of course, they could not, because they were under the sway, under the influence of the other blind men in this story, and that's the Pharisees. They have a history of blindness that is well established. They were the ones who could not see the Savior. They were the ones who could not see what God actually wanted them to do. And when they saw the man, they asked him how he was healed. They wanted to find out exactly what was going on. And when he explained it, this is what happened. Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath." Pointed that out emphatically. Others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" And there was a division among them. Now, it's amazing to hear this reaction from the Pharisees. And it's amazing to note how the Pharisees were so blinded by their hatred of Jesus. They were mad at Jesus for applying clay to a man's eyes on the Sabbath. That was something that was really important to them. But they said nothing about the blind man walking all the way to the pool of Siloam and washing off his face. They said nothing about that to the man who was formerly blind. Now, they didn't notice that this was some kind of work, and we know how strict they were, because back in John chapter 5, when Jesus healed a lame man and he told him to take up his bed and walk, and it was a Sabbath day, what did they do to him? They yelled at him, they fussed at him, because he was carrying his bed on the Sabbath day. And yet, this man went all the way to the pool, dipped in, washed his face off, and they didn't say a word about that. Here they were beginning to be more concerned about Jesus. And they were concerned about what things Jesus was doing. In fact, they were so blind to what was going on that later, when this blind, formerly blind man pointed out the gravity of the miracle that Jesus had done and that he must be God because of this miracle, they kicked him out of the synagogue, just as they had threatened to do to anyone who confessed that Jesus was the Christ. They, the Pharisees, were stumbling in spiritual blindness. They would not see the light. It's not that they couldn't see it. They just would not see it. And that may have been the reason for the blindness of the parents. We don't remember the parents too often, but you have to think about the parents in this story as well. The Pharisees call the parents of this man to them to identify their son and to verify that this son of theirs had been blind from birth. Basically, they hauled him up in front of a tribunal and said, "Look, this guy says he's your son, and he says he was blind from birth, but he's been healed. Now, I want you to tell us, is this really your son?" Now, think about that for a minute. They bring these parents up there and say this to him. And they asked them, saying, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" The parents answered them and said, "Well, we know this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees, we do not know, or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He's of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Imagine, if you will, you have a child who has been blind from birth. And this child is 20, 22 years old. And you get a phone call from him. "Your son can't see." What are you going to do? You're going to hit your knees. You're going to pray. You're going to thank God. You're going to go see your son. You are going to be overjoyed. And you can imagine the emotions that must have been running through these parents of this young man who had been blind from birth. But now the Pharisees have hauled them up in front of this tribunal and they said, "Is this your son? You tell us if this is your son. You know what's going to happen to you if you can't tell us the things that we need to know." And so they sort of backed off and copped out a little bit. "Hey, he's of age. You ask him what he's going to do." You can understand how frightened they were that they might be excommunicated from the synagogue, kicked out of the synagogue. Their thoughts were really of their son, but they were also for themselves. They didn't want this blacklist, the black mark on their lives. And so they took the easy way out. They were stumbling in a blindness of self. They did not want to see the light. Which brings us to the light. In verse 5, Jesus said, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. All of these blind men and women had known that the light was coming into the world. In Isaiah chapter 42, verses 6 and 7, God says, I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness, and I will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentile, to open blind eyes, to bring out prisoners from the prison, those who sit in darkness from the prison house. Then if you go down to verse 16 in that particular passage, God even talked about the blind people. I will bring the blind by a way they did not know. I will lead them in paths they have not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked places straight. These things I will do for them and will not forsake them. I will make darkness light before them. And isn't that what he did for this man who was born blind? He made darkness light. Not only physically, but if he just took the time to listen, spiritually as well. He was coming in the world to bring light in many different ways. Jesus was coming into the world to bring light by his words. He was bringing his words to the apostles so that they could do that for mankind. Neither the man nor the parents were sinners who caused any kind of blindness. The man did not sin before he was born or when he was born to cause this blindness. The parents didn't pass this on to him. The blindness occurred, and we don't know why. It might have been an infection. Those of you who are, well, you're all at least my age, almost. Remember Doc Watson? You know Doc Watson, you're not quite my age either. Doc Watson, y'all, oh man, I'm getting old. Remember Doc Watson, the bluegrass artist? You know, he played guitar and banjo and all that stuff. When he was about 6 months old, he got an eye infection. This was in 1925, and he went blind because of this eye infection just that quickly. And he was blind the rest of his life. I thought it was very interesting. There was a story about him. I have to give this as a sidelight. Even though he was blind, you know, he was doing things around the house and all. And one day his father said to him and his brother, if you'll go out and chop down this tree, I'll give you $10. And you can split it between you. So he and his brother went out and chopped down the tree. I just want to know who was swinging the axe. I hope it was his brother. Interestingly enough, with the $5 that he got, his brother went out and bought a new suit. With the $5 Doc Watson got, he went out and bought a guitar. Smart man. But anyway, this could have been an infection. It could have been some kind of a genetic defect. It could have been a vitamin deficiency. We don't know why this man was blind, but we do know that God was going to use this blindness as something good, something out of which good could come. He could work through this blind man to bring light, not just to the blind man, but to bring light to other people. And that's the lesson for us today. Sometimes we stumble in blindness, and a blindness of usefulness. We feel like we don't have anything that we can offer God. We feel like we're about the lowest form there is. We just don't understand how much we have and what God has given us. How can God use me, we say. In 2 Timothy 2, 20 and 21, it says, but in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from the latter, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and useful for the master, prepared for every good work. It doesn't matter if you're gold or silver or wood or clay. You can be useful for the Lord. You just have to want to be useful. You have to listen to the Lord. The master is a master. The master is a master sculptor. He's a master painter. He's a master potter. This useful, pitiful, blind beggar became a powerful vessel. He was useful to God to prove his son's deity. You know, that the miracles were there to prove Jesus was who he said he was. And this blind man was a part of that. He was probably later on useful in spreading the message of Jesus. Jesus' actions brought sight to the blind man's dark world. I was blind, now I see, is what the blind man said. But he saw in more ways than one. There's some important points that we need to remember about this blind man. First of all, this blind man did not ask to be healed. He was begging by the side of the road. And the apostle said, hey, Jesus. They ask a theological question, basically. Who sinned that this man was born blind, his parents or him? And Jesus said, well, I'm going to show you a work. And then he spit. He got some clay, he spit in his hand, he rubbed it, and then he turned to the blind man and he applied that clay. Can you imagine the blind man? He's standing there minding his own business, begging, and the next thing he knows, he's got clay being rubbed on his eyes. And Jesus says, go and wash in the pool of Siloam. So what does he do? He goes to the pool of Siloam. He accepts this opportunity to be healed. He did what Jesus told him. He did not ask him, why are you doing this to me? He did not debate the spiritual aspects of what was going on. He did not discuss why he had the blindness in the first place. He did what Jesus asked him to do so he could be healed. He was willing to share his joy as well. Even with the Pharisees, despite the danger of being excommunicated from the synagogue, he was standing there boldly proclaiming what Jesus had done for him. When Jesus came to him and told him who he was willing to follow him. That came a little later on in the passage. I want you to remember something about this. Jesus sought this man out twice. The first time was when he applied that clay without being asked. He just did it. The second time was when he went and found him and told him who he was. And both times, the blind man was willing to see the Savior. He was willing to accept the gift of grace that had been given to him. He came from darkness into light. He wanted to follow the light, and he did not have any questions about it. He just wanted to follow this man. We can all find ourselves in this story in some way. At one time, we are the apostles. At one time, we are unsure of what's going on. We don't have any earthly idea. Sometimes you sit there and read a scripture 400 times, and you still don't get everything you want to get out of it. You're still baffled by things. But we keep working at it. We keep trying to see that light. At other times, we are the neighbors. We are afraid. We are afraid to tell people. We're afraid to talk to people. We are afraid to show who we are. Sometimes, we are the Pharisees. Sometimes we are spiritually blind. Sometimes we are the parents. We are wrapped up in ourselves and want to just compartmentalize everything. Wouldn't it be great if we could all understand that we're also, most of the time, the blind man? And we could heed the words of Psalm 107, 8 through 15. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men. For he satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness. Those who sat in darkness and in the shadow of death, bound in affliction and irons, because they rebelled against the words of God and despised the counsel of the Most High. Therefore he brought down their heart with labor. They fell down, and there was none to help. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he saved them out of their distresses. He brought them out of the darkness and the shadow of death, and broke their chains in pieces. Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men. The blind man came from darkness into light. He was born blind, and he stumbled along during his life, unsure and pitiful. And then that light came to him, and he followed the light, who was Jesus. We still have that light today. In the book Space, James Michener said this, an age is called dark, not because the light fails to shine, but because people refuse to see it. And we've talked about that before in Bible class and other sermons and all that. People just refuse to see it. We talked about that this morning. That's great theology, but it's lifted pretty much straight from 1 John chapter 1 and verses 5 through 7. This is the message which we have heard from him and declare to you, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. And the blood of Jesus Christ, his son, cleanses us from all sin. Y'all have heard about black holes. You've heard about black holes out in space. The gravity is so intense that light cannot escape. It just sucks in everything, and that you have these holes there. There's no light there. Sometimes our lives can be those black holes. Sometimes we don't see any light in our lives. We get so discouraged and so upset over things that we cannot see the light. But you know what? The light is out there. And the reason we can't see the light is because we see a faint light. And if we'll just go toward that light, we can be in that light. We can have all these things that John talked about, this fellowship, these wonderful things with Jesus Christ, and not only with him, but our fellow travelers. This morning, if you have a need to answer an invitation, maybe stumbling along in the darkness, your clay has been applied. All you got to do is wash it off so you can see the light. We give you an opportunity to do that while we stand and sing.